Everyone, thank you for this opportunity. Please grant yourself permission to let the day go. You're still in it. You're still here. If you would like, feel free to close your eyes. But most importantly, do that which gives you safety and gives you comfort and gives you the ability to surrender tension. Let's begin with three more large than usual breaths. Number two. And with this third one, let it go all the way into the center of you. Now just allow your breath to find its natural tempo and bring your awareness and your attention to that point where your breath enters and pauses and turns around and goes out. When our bodies leave the safety of our mother's womb, we take our first inhalation. At the moment of leaving the body at death, we take our final exhalation. But during this life, during this beautiful journey, we add a third component. We inhale, and then we pause before we exhale. For these next few moments, grant yourself the ability to notice the pause between your breaths. There's nothing to do. There's no control necessary. Gently observe this pause, this emptiness, this unknown that is so constant, we cease to notice it. Our lives moving in the pursuit of breath coming in and breath going out. Here, now, take a break. Allow. It's both and neither. Sense your body in any way you wish. Sense your surroundings in any way you enjoy. Sense that you can sense and celebrate that you are here and now. We are together. We are sharing this breath. We are co-inspirators. Inspiration comes and goes, and we are with what comes and goes. Just enjoy the beautiful sounds and let them drift. And if you feel safe, allow yourself to drift. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, only being. I shall leave you silent for a moment and let you be. Thank you. ever so quietly and gently, invite your senses back to this moment and know that we are whole, complete, and perfect without anything on our part. And all is well. Ladies and gentlemen, your musical director, Terry. Oh, thank you so much. I absolutely know how much you love my singing. And I just want you to know how much I love her playing. The thing about people who are genuinely, genuinely masterful and heartfelt is they transcend words. And I just adore you, Terry. Thank you so much. You are so blessed. Once again.
I love that song. All right. Let me begin by giving thanks. It is a great honor and a great privilege to be in this place with you in this moment. I stand here because of the diligent, devoted love and generosity of everyone who has stood before us in a place to share their heart and their mind, whether you agree with them or not. And so I just want to acknowledge that my dear, dear friend, Kevin, is gifting me on my birthday with something that's profoundly important to me. You all know what a show guy I am, what a showbiz guy. But there are very few places in the world where I completely reveal all that I am with who you are. And I have no defenses, nor do I wish to have any. And one of the ways in which I honor you and this place is with rigorous honesty. So today, I want to thank you, Kevin. I want to thank Bob and Charlotte Egan. And I want to thank everyone who serves here. And I want to thank this place, because there isn't any other place like this. And as a musician, boy, have you got a concert hall. Oh my God. What a groovy place. My favorite people that I hope will heckle me today, Chuck and Betty. You know me, I'm a spiritual heckler. And I want to acknowledge anyone who is new and with us for the first time. And I want to share with you something that Kevin wrote down for me, because I get so moved I can't remember it. You know how there are things that are really important to you and you can't remember them because they're that important? So here are some words about why we are here and this place is here. And know that it's not put upon you. It's a loving, open-hearted invitation. Explore this idea. Explore this sentiment. So I offer to you. In our unity of purpose, we are guided by infinite wisdom and prospered by divine love. So if you are here for the first time, I want to do a disclaimer. I do not represent unity. I don't speak for unity. I am a heckler. I am an outsider. I am he who does not believe as you do. And I love you anyway. And I know you love me anyway. One of the beauties about the open-heartedness and open-mindedness of this place is that even an atheist and non-believer such as myself is warmly and welcomed and brought in and given such support. And so why would I wish to offend you? But today being my birthday, buckle up. Boo-ah-ha-ha. So I want to begin with a true story. Lord Remington and Smedley are sitting at the gentleman's club with a Courvoisier and a cigar, lovely jasmine tea on the table, and they are reminiscing about their exploits in the world. Above Lord Remington, a giant lion's head mounted fiercely on the wall. Smedley turns to Lord Remington and says, "I say, Lord, isn't that the lion you shot on safari?" Lord Remington says,
"I was with the blunderbuss, and I was moving through the grass, and then as I was about to pierce the reeds, that lion appeared.
Smedley said, "Well, what did you do?" "I pooped my pants." Smedley says, "Oh, Lord Remington, anyone confronted by such a beast would do such a thing."
"No, Smedley, I mean right now when I went roar."
"I'd like to offer that to you as a shift in perception. The topic I wrote in order not to draw people and push them away from here was Ugly Duckling Part 2. Probably a year or two ago, I think you asked me to speak, and I talked about the fairy tale, children's fairy tale of the ugly duckling, and used that as a metaphor for awakening in consciousness. And today, we're going to talk about Happily Ever After. The Swan. I was originally going to title this An Atheist in the Pulpit for my beloved friends who are non-believers like myself. However, I didn't want to be too provocative. Just a little bit. And so, I'm not here to divide you. I am not here to persuade you to change your beliefs. You may relax. I will not appear at your doorstep with a blank book saying, "You have to read this," or get you to sign up or anoint yourself or whatever it is. Anoint. However, when I'm speaking, when I use, you know, I love language and I love words, and my many, many years in the theater, it's a critical component. And in the 30 years of being involved in New Thought, what I've noticed is that consciousness, as we define it, lives in language. So quite often, if we'd like to have a new experience, we can often find it in the words in our heads that we are listening to. So specifically, a theist, or an atheist, as I self-identify, is one who does not believe in an anthropomorphized being, a person-shaped G.O.D. Mickey Mouse is anthropomorphized. Mice do not wear gloves. Sorry. And so when I'm talking about I don't believe in G.O.D., I'm specifically, and this is a short list, Yahweh, of the Jewish faith, the Hebrew faith, Zeus, for those Greeks in the room, Kali, for those from India, the Buddha, for those who are all over the place. My favorite, Uhura Mazda, after which the car is named, but if you watched Ghostbusters, Sigourney Weaver makes love to Uhura Mazda, Babylonian deity. Tunkashila, for those on the Red Road. And of course, thousands of creators and creatrix, male and female concepts of what I like to refer to as the great mystery, borrowing from the indigenous peoples of the world. So I don't believe in any of those, and I don't believe in Jesus. Now, if you get a little in your gut, just remember what I am producing is hot air. And that all of us started out pre-verbal. All of us started out with no words, but lots and lots of feeling, lots and lots of emotion. And that I offer to you today is where belief anchors. Because, well, before I go into the definition of belief, let me give you just the shortest recap of the ugly duckling. So, UD, ugly duckling, believes it is a dismal failure as a duck, strives in every way available to a small waterfowl to gain acceptance, become one among many. Countless self-help books, therapy, age regression, shiatsu, crystals, Course in Miracles, spiritual retreats. Then it turns to the dark side, gambling, smoking, interspecies sex. Even turning to total strangers and asking, "Are you my mommy?" Have you ever done that? Yeah. And after all of this, it's cast out by its peer group, cast out and left to drench itself in self-pity and grief and distress and struggle, and is losing it into the pond and notices a reflection. You got it. Ta-da! Swan. And UD goes, bing! And the story ends. Makes me very mad. They end at the beginning of something new. But, you know, little kids can only absorb so much. And when you get to from Ugly Duck all the way to the gateway to an unknown, you can't keep going. It's just too much. So today, what I'm offering you is, what is Swan? What is it to question what you profoundly, profoundly and deeply know in your bones to be true? I'm going to refer to that as belief. The ugly duck, for the purpose of this talk, represents deeply held, unquestioned thought construction. Values like love, hate, Republican, Democrat, whatever you'd like to paint in the line that says, I believe. And I want to offer that there is this tendency in our society, especially now, we refer to it in the media as polarization, us versus them. Oh, it's good theater. And it is also a source for war and suffering and pain and many horrible stuff that I'm not going to go into today. You get plenty of that anywhere you look. What I am going to focus on is what I'm referring to as the third rail, not knowing. During the meditation, I asked you to attend the still point in your breath. Because everywhere we go, from the moment we're born in, out of the body of our mothers into the life that ends this body, I'm going to let you decide what you want to do with afterlife. That's for you. But I want to point out that the entire trip, every moment, every time we are here, if we know it or not, we don't know. Every time you pause between and you're actually not knowing what's next. And generally, it's in that gap when death occurs because we end with an exhalation. So I'm just offering to you the idea that not knowing is so constant, so common, so a part of who we are that we don't notice it anymore. It's become invisible to not know. But I haven't met anybody, myself included, who likes not knowing. Do you have the answer? Yeah, and we just make stuff up. So, for our purposes, ugly duckling is code for inaccurate, deeply held perceptions, and swan is code for, I don't know, followed by, want to find out? Okay? So I went to our friend Daniel Webster, one of many who claims to know what words mean. He has a definition of the word belief as follows. This is from our good friend Daniel. a habit of mind, a state of mind in which trust or confidence is placed in some person or thing. Synonyms are stuff like faith, credence, giving credit, etc. Now, faith, Mr. Webster goes on to state, implies certitude, full trust and confidence in the source, whether there be an objective evidence or not. And the example given, only Bible quote I'm going to use, from a Hebrew 11:1 of the King James Bible, it states, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Very supported idea in this belief system for those who are visiting and don't know about Unity. We are strong proponents of the use of faith. I encourage you personally, do your own exploration as well. And in a moment you'll understand why. I like to think of it as subjective. You know, the thing about faith is you feel it in your bones. And my head says to me, well, that's true. I feel it, and I know it's true. That for me is the sensation, the physical feeling of what faith feels like. All of this is to say, from my what I'm offering you to consider, is that for most of humanity, most human beings going all the way back, belief is generally a strongly held idea or set of ideas or a value or a philosophy. And it has a subjective internal component, what I'm calling the anchor. It feels true to you. It feels real to you. It's real to you, just like being a duck as an identity was real for the little duck. Now, just for fun, I throw in doubt. The definition of doubt is not only not to believe, it is to question the validity of an underlying assumption. You're questioning, is this true? You're asking yourself, is what I'm perceiving accurate? Does it match? Now, this is sometimes referred to as critical thinking. This is very unpopular with flat earthers, very unpopular with people who believe the moon landing did not happen. Conspiracy, know what I mean? Just saying. So for a moment, please play with me. Close your eyes. Reach out with your hand. Don't hurt anybody, but point toward where you are sure north is. Go. Point north. Okay. Open your eyes, but don't move your hands and look around. Look around and ask yourself, am I going to get in that person's car? Now, if I brought out a compass right now, we'd all still be wrong because there's true north and magnetic north, or, you know the difference. One of them is invented and the other one the scientists like to refer to as the top of the planet, which, by the way, the poles flip every 100, 200 million years. North, never mind. Okay. Now, I want you to consider for a moment other examples of shifts of perception. How many of you, considering the Ugly Duckling story, have sat down with an innocent child and started by saying to the child at the beginning of the fairy tale, oh, by the way, the protagonist in this story is adopted from an unwed swan and was never told that it's a swan because they wanted it to bond with the duck family. Or put yourself in the little duck's webbed feet and recall some of your earliest childhood memories that you have had rearranged later as an adult, such as visiting an elementary school you attended and seeing the actual size of your desk. How about that giant tree you swear you labored to climb up into at risk of death, and it turns out it isn't any taller than the garden shed? Or the hill you had to climb to get home from school every day that is kind of a drainage ditch? The nice thing about perception is it can shift over time, or like that. It's very elastic. It's easy to forget that your point of view changes over time, because the human nature is, I'm the same I've always been. There are recordings of elders with memory loss who call the police to report that there's an old woman in my bathroom. Because they're 16 in their head. Anyway, let me share just a few of the shifts in perception that have occurred to me. The first, most significant, over which I blame all my PTSD. In our house, we had phones everywhere. And, you know, remember those things that had cords going into them and a big hand thing? So as a little kid, I'd grab this thing, and I'd pull it off, and I'd put it on my shoulder, and I'd listen to the dial tone. And if there was someone talking, the magic voices, I would listen to that. And there was my mom and my brother, just before Christmas. And my brother is saying, I'm going to climb up on the roof tonight, and I'm going to stomp around on the roof just before he falls asleep. You put the cookies out tonight, okay? We don't want him to know there is no Santa. No Santa! I was inconsolable. I screamed, threw the phone down. And I'm still not quite whole. And for any of you, it's not true. There is a Santa. There is. So that was my first and earliest recollection of a shift in perception that rocked my world, that made me question reality, because nothing was real like Santa Claus. Then I found out at 12, I found my adoption papers. And it turns out mom is grandma, and dad is gone, and nobody wants to talk about him because he's a big Hell's Angel. And that girl who's my sister is my mama, and she used to be a stripper in nightclubs. And oh, it was a little disorienting. Brothers and sisters are now aunts and uncles. The story continues. 15 years old, alcohol. I can be anybody, anywhere, anytime. Jet pilot, you bet. That went till I was 32 and was given sobriety. Then, at 16 years of age, I started living on my own, and I got my first job in the theater, and I started getting to go into nightclubs and drink martinis because I could sing. And then from there, theater put a costume on me. This is a costume, by the way. But it's a costume to honor you, to show respect, because I'm a cash guy. I don't do ties and all that stuff unless it matters. I'm also wearing my Screen Actors Guild pin because I'm a retired Screen Actors Guild guy. And the reason I wear that is because it has a two-faced image on it. The symbol for acting. Okay? Then I sang and spoke and participated for 30 years in Unity and Science of Mind, all up and down the West Coast and around the Puget Sound. Got to meet Bob and Charlotte, and now my sweet Kevin and Jenny. And that altered everything. At 55, I got to have my first stroke and spend 8 hours in ICU. That changes your point of view, right? And now I'm a social worker for coming up on just a little shy of 8 years. And I go into the homes of people, and I try to provide theater one-on-one so that people will have catharsis, so that they will question what they know and say, yeah, I could use a walker. Now, I'd like you to consider, back to you, that when we review our shifts in perception about our life experiences, these are actually always a significant emotional change. It's a significant emotional event to have cancer, a stroke, to see the birth of your child, to be one who gives birth, to get a career, to lose a career, to buy a home, to have your car trashed. All of these are linked to our perception. And our perceptions, like I spoke at the beginning, are the material out of which our beliefs are formed. Now, the commonality, as long as human beings have been around, there's a lot of evidence that humans are meaning-making machines. We make stuff up, and then we believe it, and then we act accordingly, and we say, well, it says right there that blah, 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 so I gotta, And for most people, that's, you know, for like picking whether you like espresso or not, it's no big deal. In the big picture, creation myths, history, at the individual, your family story, your individual experiences. They're your narrative. And what do they have in common? Identity. Humans hunger to understand, control, and experience certainty around identity. I do. And nothing threatens identity, who you think you are, like not knowing. Some big change, someone important to you dies that you didn't know you based your identity because of the relationship. I therefore offer to you, if you believe, like I imagine most of you, since most of humanity believes in G-O-D, God, that is probably something that was given to you, inherited. Something that you may have simply said, that's good, because it feels good. It feels safe. Mom and Dad believe that. And it's uncomfortable to go outside of the known. And I hear people say things like, well, I'm a former Catholic. You'll never hear me say I'm a former believer in Zeus. So, no disrespect. I'm simply pointing out that what we believe is simply that. It's what we believe. And what I'm offering for you to consider is, if people say, well, if you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, then what do you believe in, you rascal? Because they're certain that I'm a immoral, cold-hearted monster. If some people do. Not everybody. Growing numbers of people don't believe. What I tell them is I believe in believing, the actual act. Because as in the theater, I was taught, you can suspend what you believe, Peter, in service to telling the story. And everyone who sits in the audience pretends for the length of the show, that's not an actor. Those aren't actors. That's, ta-da, whatever story is being told. And then you get to have your emotions as the story unfolds. Tragedy, comedy, love, whatever it is, the human condition. And then at the end, whew, the actors come out, take off their costumes, and everybody goes, yay, or boo, or whatever it is. You know, you get to have your feelings because you bought into the story willingly. You suspended what you know to be true. Mark Twain used to say, faith is believing something you know ain't true. Now, again, as I told you before, I am not asking you, please give up what you believe. I am not challenging that. What I'm asking you to consider is revisiting and updating your current relationship with the unknown. How comfortable are you not knowing? How comfortable are you going a different way home? Thank you. Ah, that was good. Thank you. So, the ability to challenge yourself because you say so is a potential path for growth. It's a potential path for freedom. Nothing is as painful as believing something and feeling trapped in it. Well, I have to stay with her because whatever that is. Or, well, you know, I'm too old to go apply for that job. After my stroke, I went to 70 job interviews on a walker and got 70 no thank yous. And I almost believed I was too old. Now I'm coming up on almost 10 years doing that because somebody wanted a guy on a walker. They didn't want some young pup. I wanted an older, experienced dude. So I'd like to bring you to a close with this set of questions that I use for myself. I offer them with love and respect to you to kind of flush your system, kind of the roto-rooter of believing. Ask yourself, and it sort of opens the door for swan behavior, because you see, we don't know how well the former believing I'm an ugly duck does with becoming swanish. We all assume that the little duck just runs like a Breck commercial up to the swan and a little, oh, and there's love and joy. And they might have just gone, get away, get away. We don't know because we never talk about what is it like to live in I don't know all the time and being willing to fling yourself with complete abandon into the unknown. It is not comfortable. We had as our topic comfort. Well, life can begin at the edge of your comfort zone. Go get uncomfortable. So here's some questions I use that if you'd like, feel free to steal them. You can just have them. You can ask yourself in any moment, you can pause and ask, is what I am believing about myself in this moment, is it something I voluntarily examined and created? Or is this inherited because Aunt Myrtle told me? Or my dad wanted me? Or my school? Or my nationality? I am this because I inherited it. Another question. You can just ask yourself, who am I being in this moment? That I'm experiencing life this way. Bob Egan used to talk about that we project in consciousness out onto this hologram bubble, and that what we're seeing as reality is a projection of perception. Along that line, the bottom line is, am I willing to be accountable for my own experiences, for my point of view? You can ask yourself, am I being congruent? Are my actions and my beliefs really aligned? Or am I a hypocrite? It hurts to say I'm lying to myself, but boy, is it liberating. Walk your talk. Your talk might grow corn and feed other people. Does what I believe cause harm to myself or to others? I like to remind people that throughout history, gods have never killed anyone. People with gods kill people. I didn't burst into flames. And a simple one is, do I think I'm right? Am I willing to have all the consequences that go with what I believe and the actions that follow from that? I leave you with this last thought. Besides the fact that I adore you, and I thank you for letting me speak today, love expands to include. Love expands to include. Fear contracts to exclude. It's about protection. And so, thank you.
Thank you, Peter.